south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. The theme of this program, The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, is really the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, as experienced by expats and gringos. Which means, depending on if you're a Latin or a gringo, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great could mean completely different things. For example, take that famous mañana time thing. For Latins, that's great. That means if you got an appointment at your lawyer's office or doctor or whatever, you can be a half an hour, or even 2 hours late, and they'll still take you with a smile. But mañana time for us gringos and expats is an endless irritant that often puts us in a kind of a sour mood. But you have to remember, a thing like mañana time is what contributes to the happiness syndrome down here in Latin America and the fact that people are so much less stressed. And you'd think, because so many people down here are poor and living on the edge, if that's how the average person's life was going up in the first world, he'd be in a state of stress all the time. So up there in St. Louis, yes. Down here in Latin America, no. Case in point, just yesterday I was visiting a single-family home construction site. Nice house, what you'd call upper middle class here in Latin America. Middle class where you come from. Maybe 250 to 350,000 in the Minnesota burbs. And down here in the Latin American burbs, probably around 125 to 150,000 if you have your own architect and contract it out yourself. Now, this is in a gated, guarded subdivision. And I was invited over by the owner. He's a Latin guy, an engineer. 40-something years old, and he wanted my opinion on a few things, including a security system and, believe it or not, a drone. Get to that later. Anyway, it's being built on a half-acre lot, lots of trees and valleys and hills, a pristine, green, healthy environment most Americans would die for. I'm guessing he paid 30 grand for the lot. So he's building this new house, and it's for his brother, and it's right next door to his own house. Yes, it's kind of typical. Most Latins live very close by to their relatives, whether you're talking about the richest or poorest of neighborhoods. In fact, most houses have extended family living there, grandma, grandpa, the kids, even married couples. It's been a tradition in Latin societies forever, which is why there's absolutely no shame with a 35 or 40-year-old son or daughter living at home, or even married couples living with mom and dad basically forever. Anyway, this guy's got money and a huge, beautiful garden. In fact, he has a full-time gardener. So we're sitting down in a little gazebo in his garden, looking over at the next lot where the construction's going on. In fact, it's a big concrete day. They're pouring a cement slab for a roof. Remember, good construction here in Latin America is anti-seismic, so there's a lot of concrete, block, and rebar. Therefore, a lot of houses have concrete slab roofs. And some people don't finish them off, so they're dead ugly, of course. Especially when they leave the piping and rebar sticking out because they intend to put another story on someday or another, which they almost never get to. Remember, I spoke about that, I think it was in last week's show. However, educated upper-middle-class guys like this one have more taste than that, usually. They always try to finish their houses off 100%. So yes, this guy has some class, or maybe it's his wife that has the class. That's how it usually works out, huh? He's having his brother's roof finished off like his roof, with those nice classic Spanish terracotta tiles. You know what I mean. By the way, I asked the guy how much those things cost. He said about $1.50 a square foot. And installation, maybe another $1 a square foot. So let's say you've got a 2,000 square foot house. 1,000 square foot roof, that would be around $2,500, right? Meanwhile, I just looked up the cost of putting down a shingle roof up in the States, and guess what? They're saying the average labor cost for installing a shingle roof is $35 an hour. You heard me, a shingle roof. How classy, huh? Meanwhile, you pay your average builder down here $15 to $20 a day, whether you're building a wall, putting up shingles, or terracotta. And talking about shingles, that's what 98% of American houses have. Who can afford a terracotta Spanish tile roof up in the States? Only the mega wealthy, right? No, and I'm not talking about those fiberglass, prefab, fake-looking terracotta clone roofs either. You know, the ones you see in those McMansion subdivisions all through the States. I'm talking about the real thing down here in Latin America that'll last a couple hundred years for sure. Oh, and by the way, the best guarantee you're going to get on a shingle roof up in the States is 20 years. So right now, if you want, let's say, 1,000-square-foot shingle roof up in the States, it's going to cost you around $2,500. The same as a terracotta roof down here, and that includes materials and installation. Now, the reason I mention this is because at almost every Expat Insider seminar I've ever given, when we're doing the Boots on the Ground tour, people see roofs like that. The obvious question is, how much? And when I tell them, they say, sign me up. I want one. That is, if they're going to build, which I don't recommend at first anyway. Remember I said rent, always rent, at least 6 months. But where were we? Oh yeah, I was sitting in the gazebo with my Latin engineer buddy. By the way, he's a civil engineer, which is, by the way, way down the list of real engineers. That's what we used to say back in engineering school. I remember back then, civil engineers and those taking engineering management as a degree, they really got no respect from electrical, computer, biomedical, chemical, and mechanical engineers. Yeah, you know, you can't get away from classism and elitism, even in professional schools. Or I should say, especially in professional schools. I mean, let's face it. If you're in a medical specialty, what specialties do you think get the least amount of respect from their peers in general? Veterinarians, chiropractors, optometrists, podiatrists, dentists, and proctologists, in that order. By the way, I got confirmation on that from a couple of doctors in my family, but you knew that already, right? Anyway, I was sitting with this guy in his beautiful garden in that gazebo, watching the 8 guys working on his brother's construction site next door. And if you know anything about building a house or any kind of structure at all, you know the concrete part of the work is the dirtiest, filthiest, hardest part of the job. And already, an hour into the project, these guys were absolutely soaked and thoroughly matted with water, sand, Portland cement, and moist chunks of this and that. But here's the thing. I wish I would have recorded the sounds and the voices of these guys while they were working. If you were to close your eyes and you didn't know these guys were putting on a concrete roof and doing one of the dirtiest jobs imaginable, you'd have thought they were on a beach playing sand volleyball or in a pool, screwing around and having a great old time. These guys were laughing and singing and telling jokes. I'm telling you, you'd have thought these guys were on vacation having the time of their lives. And when I peeked through the fence, they didn't see me, of course, I could see these guys throwing little gobs of cement at each other, laughing it up, but always moving, always working. You know, guy horseplay, but yet they were really getting the job done and fast. And when I asked my engineering buddy how much he paid these guys, he said, the guy in the red shirt, the boss, who was just as dirty and waterlogged as the rest, he told me he paid that guy $30 a day, and the other 7 guys working for him, they're called albañiles, they all got around $15 a day. Now, we were talking about mañana time before, right? And I asked my Latin buddy, how far was his crew behind on that job? And he said, oh, around 2 months, and they had about 4 months to go to complete the thing. By the way, when you ask how far behind people are on anything, that's a legit question because that's almost always the case here. All part of the mañana time thing, you know. By the way, if you recall, the average house that is first world style construction takes about a year to build down here. And in the States, about half that time. So why is that? Well, you'll hear a lot of excuses, but none of them really hold up. One of the excuses being, well, they're black and concrete, that takes longer. Then there is that heavy rainy season, about 6 months a year, and you can't work outside during that time because you'll get drenched every day, and the outside work will suffer too. But you see, with efficient, proper planning, none of that's a problem, and you could get a house done in 6 months. But still, it almost always takes a year. The real reason is because Latins build houses and other projects in a traditional way, an inefficient way. They know nothing of ergonomics. Practically everything they do is messy, chaotic, and disorganized. Bottom line, they just don't think too far ahead. For example, I've never seen a single house or building under construction where some kind of substantial change, structural otherwise, hasn't been done right in midstream. I'm talking about fairly big changes, too. All the walls are up, the roof is on, and all of a sudden the plumber comes in or the electrician and says, hey, this column's not supposed to be here, or you got to move that, or you got to move the staircase a little bit. Remember, all of this is in concrete, not wood. And that means, as Mo would say to the other stooges, well, fellas, I guess we got a blast. By the way, big changes often happen at the end of a project too. For example, the owner or the owner's wife will do a walkthrough when it's near completion and one of them will say, that archway's got to be moved over, or it's too small, or it's too big, or make the closet higher or lower or bigger or smaller. Remember, we're talking about block and concrete and steel now. So again, fellas, we got a blast. Unlike in the first world, nothing down here is made exactly to print. Architects and builders will tell you that all the time. So unless you're living in a cookie-cutter, matchbox-style subdivision where all the stinking houses are the same, your own first-world-style, what they'd call upper-middle-class house down here, will take a year to be built. And here's one thing you certainly have to keep in mind. Almost all the guys constructing your house, except for maybe your general contractor, architect, and foreman, will be living in middle and lower-middle-class neighborhoods, so their own houses will have laminate roofs, no hot running water, old beat-up furniture that's falling apart, smudged and stained walls that haven't been painted for years or even decades. Maybe they won't even have glass panes in some of the windows. And, of course, there'll be driveway chickens and the bathrooms. Well, let's not talk about the bathrooms. Now, these are the guys that'll be building your house and putting in all those fine details us first worlders like so much. Well, just remember that old saying, poor folks have poor habits. That's the way it is. So get used to the fact that when any phase of the job is completed or when they go home for the night, they will leave one big frickin' mess. When they're making and cutting wooden forms for concrete, there'll be sawdust and bent nails everywhere. Some of that stuff might even end up on the neighbor's property. Look out. When they paint something, there'll be drips and drabs and tiny splotches everywhere. In fact, I've never seen anyone who's painting protect anything else with masking tape. And that goes for drop cloths, too. You'll probably have to show your maintenance guy how to use the both of them. So do buy a few drop cloths and keep them around the house. Sure, hardware stores have masking tape down here, but almost no one uses it. Why do you think? It's an extra expense. You'd be smart to have a few rolls of that in your junk drawer, too. So be prepared, there'll be splatters everywhere. And look out if these guys are using tar. That goes for thinner, waterproofing, shellac, varnish, stain, or anything that needs to be applied with a brush or a roller. Oh, and by the way, here's another thing that will certainly piss you off. You can count on the fact, if you park your car anywhere near the job site and there are a few workers around, they'll lean on it, touch it, put their coffee cups down on it, not to mention spread the plans and drawings of the project out on your hood. Because, you know, the hood of your 4Runner is a natural desktop, right? Oh, and here's another thing that'll piss you off. If there's any kind of cement or mortar that's got to be mixed, it's rare they'll have one of those little cement mixers in to do it. They'll do it all by hand, no problem there, except it's very, very messy without one of those things. Not to mention, they'll rarely use a mortar board. You know what that is? That would be a nice solid surface for them to mix the cement and the sand and the gravel in and such. So if they don't have one of those little cement mixers, a good mortar board to use is a 4x8 piece of plywood. But like I said, it's rare that a contractor will use that. Instead, they'll just go right out in the front of your house and start mixing right there. Worse yet, if you've got a poured or asphalt driveway, that'll become their preferred mixing spot because it's nice and flat and solid. What happens when that's all over? You got a nice big white cement spot, a permanent stain that's very obvious. Now, Latins don't seem to mind that, but it really irks gringos. And of course, while they're mixing that stuff, that wet cement or mortar mix will splatter everywhere. So if there's a car or a building or a post or a tree anywhere within 20 or 30 feet of where they're mixing it, it will get spattered, and when they leave for the day, it'll stay spattered, unless you go out there and tell them to clean it up. And if you don't, that stuff will generally dry hard, and you won't be able to get it off the next day. Yep, that's just going to happen. That's the way they do things down here. And like I said, Latins are used to it. They don't mind. That's why they call it the third world. So let me ask you this. How are you going to know to tell them that? You'll know the next day after they've mixed some concrete in your driveway or you parked your car close to where they mixed or painted. Bottom line, you'll save yourself a lot of grief if you hang around the first couple days and set down some rules. And you have to immediately stop the presses and alert everyone when their sloppiness gets out of hand. Now, I'm not saying that some of these guys don't do beautiful work. Man, I've never seen such good metal workers, woodworkers, cement contractors, and plasterers. And they do it with so few modern tools. Believe me, contractors still come on the job with hand saws and hand drills. You know, the old brass and wooden ones with a knob on the end. Your grandpa may have had one, or you saw one on the antique home show or something. Doesn't matter. These guys can get the work done. And all of them have hand tools because they're used to working on construction sites where for the first month or so, they don't have any electricity. So it's hecho a mano all the way. That's made by hand. Funny enough, when you go to the average hardware store, you'll always see a section with power drills and such. But I have yet to see any small-time building contractor, you know, one who builds single-family homes, who's in possession of a battery-powered drill or battery-powered anything. Sure, the big outfits who advertise and have nice offices with 20, 50, 100 workers, they have a few of those. But your average contractor with less than 10 guys, well, they don't have any of that. Nor do they use bobcats or backhoes to excavate foundations and footings for single-family homes. Nope, that stuff's all done by hand. And here's the logic. Why rent a Case 580 backhoe for a half a day for, let's say, $100? By the way, in the States, it's 2 to 4 times that. When you could get 5 guys or so with picks and shovels working and digging a whole day for what it costs to rent a backhoe for 4 hours. The economics for the power equipment down here just doesn't work out compared to manual labor. Not with single-family homes, it doesn't. And by the way, I once asked that stupid question to a general contractor. I said, why don't you just rent a backhoe for a day, get it all done? And he stopped and looked at me like I was from another planet and said, what, and send my guys home? And it was only sometime later that I found out that most of these small crews of 5, 8, or 10 people are family. Uncle Tulio's the boss. He's got 3 or 4 of his sons working for him, and they got a couple of 15 and 16-year-old cousins on the payroll, too. They're not going to lay off or cut the hours of their own family members to give someone else who's not family the work. By the way, one of the sad things about the setup is the kids. I'd come right out and ask these young kids why they aren't at school, and they give the usual teenage kid answer. It's because I don't like school. In fact, I hate it. I'd rather be working. Make some money. Yeah, well, you can do that down here, but up in the States, you can talk the talk, but you can't walk the walk. Down here in Latin America, it's not unusual for very young teenagers to drop out, even 9 and 10-year-olds. You see that in the big marketplaces and on the street all the time. Kids, obviously not even teenagers yet, working alongside their parents who are usually in on it, manning little kiosks, selling things on the street. Now, of course, everyone knows public schools are absolute crap, but the kids will still learn how to read and write. Now, it's not as if the media is not talking about this stuff. You see it in the papers and on TV, but there's no real enforcement. There are no truant officers like there are up in the States. And a good percentage of families are dirt poor, so every member has to chip in, even 10 and 12-year-old kids sometimes. Which is certainly why in some Latin countries, the illiteracy rate is 15 or 20% of the population. In fact, I may have mentioned this before, but expat Eddie's girlfriend's father, that would be Eddie's future suegro, that's father-in-law, he's completely illiterate. By the way, most of the maids and cleaning ladies coming from the boonies are illiterate too, so you better watch out when you write up a shopping list for them. Which brings us back to the things you can do for your own help. For example, a friend of mine, a gringo married to a Latina, not only does he send his 40-something cleaning lady slash maid to school for language classes. No, not English lessons. That would be Spanish lessons because when he hired her, she was illiterate. Well, not only that. He pays for her 2 young kids to go to a private K-12 school. Nope, not one of those $300 or $400 a month private helicopter schools like the one he sends his kid to. Nope, that'd be a little excessive. That'd be pushing it. I guess I should explain something here. There are something like 3 different levels of K-12 private schools down here. All of them infinitely better than those terrible public schools with the broken windows, burnt out lights, and the clogged and stanky plumbing. So at the top, you've got the helicopter schools from $300 to $500 a month, where maybe half of the teachers are gringos or gringas from the States. Then there are the K-12 private schools that are maybe $100 to $200 a month, bilingual schools with high standards but no first world gringo or gringo teachers. Then there's what you might call the starter private K-12 schools. They run from maybe $40 to $100 a month. They're not bilingual, but they offer a pretty good education in Spanish. And that's where my gringo friend sends the children of his cleaning lady. And he says they love it there because very, very few indigenous people have a chance to send their kids to any place other than one of those horse public school. Great idea, huh? And if you have domestic help, you can do it for their kids too. But where were we? Oh, yeah. I started this rant today to to try to give you an idea how real the Latin happiness factor is. Even when they're soaked to the gills, slinging concrete and mortar, they really do seem happier than 99% of the gringos you meet. And, you know, Expat Eddie offers a simple explanation for that. By the way, got some cool Expat Eddie stories coming up in the future, so stay tuned. He says he's noticed that even most gringos down on vacation are clock watchers. And he says it seems as they get towards the halfway point on their vacation, they start losing their joy. The countdown to getting back on that plane and on that treadmill in Cleveland is never far from sight. Man, is he right. And I've noticed that too. Hell, I was that guy till I moved down here permanently. By the way, speaking of coming down, I've got my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar sign-up sheet ready to go. It'll be in and around Guatemala, and 90% of the time will be way off the gringo tourist trail. Exactly where you want to be to have the full effect of the gringo advantage. You'll see. So to get in on those early bird discounts, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, then click on the seminar link on the main page. And don't forget to add 3 or 4 extra days to your trip so you can take in one of those fabulous John Galt pre- or post-seminar trips. And again, I should mention, if you come down to the seminar, you can kill 2 birds with 1 stone. That is, apply for your permanent or temporary residency in Guatemala at the very same time. And you'll see all that explained in the seminar sign-up sheet, too. All right, switching gears again. You know, once in a while, I recommend a movie or a documentary or book. Well, I can tell you this. I just saw a documentary that makes it into my top 10 of all time. And the deep state is trying to censor this one, too. You just have to see this documentary. It's called Zero, that's Z-E-R-O, Days. 0 Days. After you see that, you're going to want to put your Plan B on steroids, I guarantee. No more about that. I won't spoil it. Just see it. 0 Days. All right, so at the beginning of the show, I mentioned security cameras and drones. I think everyone needs to have security cameras now, whether you're up in Big Brother Land or down here in Latin America. And I mean good high-definition ones, not the ones from Costco or Walmart. And since I'm an engineer and engineers like gadgets, maybe even almost as much as Latin women like shoes, that's why I do have a way-above-average, high-definition camera setup. Sure, I know it's overkill, but you like what you like, right? Now you can even get 3, 4, 5, 8, and 10 megapixel cameras for home use. And get this, for $100 to $200 a camera, whereas way back when, just a couple years ago, for a 3 megapixel camera, you're looking at over $500. So what about brand names? Well, I'll give you a hint. There's kind of a workhorse in the industry. It's called Hikvision, Hikvision. Made in China, of course, but what isn't? You can buy them on Amazon and they really deliver. So then, what about drones? That's a dirty word up in the States, right? And of course, up there by you, there are all kinds of restrictions when you buy a drone. Besides, you have to register them, get on a government list, and pay a fee. So then, what about Latin America? What if you want a drone down here? Do they sell them? Of course they do. The latest and greatest and newest models, too. You see, there's usually a hobby store or two in every upscale mall, and that's where they'll sell drones. However, they are about half again as much as what you'd pay for the same thing on Amazon. Yeah, if you like gadgets like I do, you'll want to have some of that stuff to play around with. Now, I've mentioned down here in Latin America, it's wide open in a lot of respects, kind of like the Wild Wild West. However, there are those few gringoized first world states down here that are trying to regulate drones. In fact, over-regulate them to the point of killing the sales of those things. How about this amazing news coming out of that tainted gringoized country? You might have guessed it, Costa Rica. Where else? And I'll translate. This comes from an article from a magazine called Central American Business Network. Title, Drones in Costa Rica, a Tax on Innovation. It says, the Costa Rican government will be affecting the activity of drones with bureaucratic costs of more than $3,500 for companies who want to use drones. And why do companies want to use drones? Of course, that's to do topographic surveys and road construction, mining, tourism, weddings, events, parades, street fairs, etc. In fact, quite a few tourist marketing programs are done these days here in Latin America using drone photography. It's either that or rent a helicopter for $300 to $500 an hour. Some choice, when a really good drone is only a couple $1,000 and it's got a rock-steady 4K or better camera. Anyway, the article says, when you're in the U.S., there is an online registration process and more, where companies and individuals pay from only $5 to $50. However, now in Costa Rica, the Directorate General of Civil Aviation does not seem to be interested at all in the exploding market for aerial drone photography. So, as of now, to receive certification to operate your drone, it will cost $1,875, plus $90 a year for a license. Not only that, you must carry proof that you've purchased third-party insurance liability coverage, estimated to be around $1,800 a year. And get this, owners will be required to take a drone safety course sanctioned by the Costa Rican government. Yeah, like those maggot-brained slugs would be up on that kind of technology. You gotta wonder which congressman's brother-in-law is gonna be teaching that course. And get this, it says, the Costa Rican Inspector of Aeronautical Operations for Civil Aviation, Alan Diquez, said in a recent interview, the original amount proposed by the government was three times higher. And they did finally cave to pressure from the aeronautics and tourism agencies that use those drones. However, it says, George Umana, president of the Association of Pilots and Operators, says the fees are so high that no one can really believe it. And the general feeling is that we will just use our drones clandestinely, with some exceptions, which is not good for general aviation and safety issues, but the government has once again interfered and made it impossible to do business as usual. Then he finished the interview by saying, the government will most likely annihilate the very industry they're trying to regulate. Meanwhile, it says, under pressure, the Costa Rican government has reduced the fee to around $1,500. But only for the next six-month period. After that, the full fee will be phased in. And lastly, it says there are 15 formal enterprises in Costa Rica engaged in importing and marketing of drone products. In addition, there are around 25 informal companies that are bringing them in and selling them. Surprise, surprise, mostly off the books. I wonder why. So to recap, the Costa Rican Aviation Administration has put heavy regulations on the use of drones, forcing operators to maintain strict flight records, GPS mapping, and to demonstrate they have a policy for damage against third parties. Meanwhile, in the rest of Latin America, only simple registration for commercial users. And as far as enforcement, forget about it. As for Costa Rica, that would be reason 6,721, why your plan B should never include that up country.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.